Welcome back. Maybe welcome to if you're hopping into weird time to hop in. Second episode, third season. I'd probably start somewhere else. But if you are, glad you're here. We're going to basically jump in where we left off season 3, episode 1. I don't think you necessarily have to listen to that one. It happened at the very end. But we're just going to pick up with an idea that we ran out of time on, basically. But start with a tweet, and I'm going to kick it to Mikkel. So everyone thinks that they are good. Nobody knows about power laws, hence why everyone thinks they are good. Your thoughts?
So we talked about this a little bit off air, but I think where my mind first went, I'm reading a book right now called How Champions Think by Bob Rotella. And he talks a lot about golfers and mainly like tennis players, like not mainly, but a lot of like individual sports like that. And although he's not talking about necessarily calling this a power law, I think it applies to exactly what you're saying here. But he brings up like if he has a client come to him and say, I want to improve, you know, I normally shoot 100. Whatever handicap that is, but just use the numbers. So I normally shoot 100 every time I play 18 holes, and I'd like to get to an 85. His comment was like, it's going to take work, and I'm going to have to spend probably a year, 2 years maybe, getting them to improve to the point where they can consistently shoot an 85. But I know that I can do it, and I know they can do it is more important. Like they, it doesn't matter if they're a professional, a normal person, just starting out, I can get them to an 85. Now, say I have a client come to me that consistently shoots an 85, and they tell me I want to shoot a 70, which is like right around par or under par through 18 holes. His comment was that may take years and borderline professionalism from the amount of like time this person is going to need to spend on the craft where they're practicing 6-8 hours a day consistently for years on end. And also from himself, like the commitment that he will need to make to that person to get them to a 70. And his point is like, although both are 15 strokes better from 100 to 85 or 85 to 70, they are very different in the approach it takes and the commitment it'll take to get from 185 versus 85 to 70. So as far as power law goes, like you can't just look at the 15 stroke difference and think it's the same shit. It's completely different because getting to a 70 from an 85 is way more difficult than getting to an 85 from a 100.
Yeah. So just for, I guess, a little bit of context, and we can link some articles. I think, have you written about power laws at all?
I don't know. I have not.
Okay. I can link a couple of things that either I've read or I've written about, but Peter Thiel, I think, gives a pretty good definition. So just to catch everyone up to speed, if you're unsure on this term, a power law distribution, the largest entity is typically bigger, more valuable, or more powerful than all of the others combined. So if you take like four of something, so car dealerships, teams or players within your team on a roster, for example, the top person is going to be orders of magnitude better, more useful, more valuable, whatever you're measuring, than the second, third, fourth, and if you have a roster of people, probably the rest of your roster combined. So I first learned about this, Sam Hinkie, former GM of the 76ers, talks about this a lot and has done some writing. And Sam, in his writing about hiring, talks about how the second person, if I and someone else are applying for a job and we're the last two candidates, whoever the top one is, whether it's me or the other person, the second best candidate is most likely not a little bit worse or something that you should be happy to settle on, that person might be 10 to 100 times worse than the person that you hopefully should hire. So that gives you a little bit of context on power law. And then what we were talking about off air, and I'll kick it back to you for some thoughts, is if you look at, like, the easiest way to do this, to give an example, is within a team. So if you look at, let's say, the Colorado Avalanche right now, the power law distribution, if you guys think of Pareto principle, same sort of track, 80-20. So, like, the guys on Colorado, McKinnon, McCarr, period. So after that, everything combined kind of falls off the table and doesn't even add up to the value that Cale McCarr and Nate McKinnon bring to the Avalanche. And obviously there's some nuance there, but I'll kick it back to you if you have some thoughts on power laws within a team.
Yeah, so just as you were talking, I was looking up the year that the Avalanche won the Cup, and I was not looking regular season, but more so with the playoffs. Like, McKinnon and McCarr, McCarr had 29 points in 20 games, and McKinnon had 24. Now, there were other guys in that range too. Landeskog and Rantanen had in the 20s as well. But if you remove McKinnon and McCarr from that playoff run, you can't replace them, like you said, with four or five other guys, even if you try to, and bring in whoever else to try to, you know, quote, like, by committee or whatever. It's just not the same. And it will not have the same return or, like, reward as just those singular two guys provide. And I think within, I mean, the other thing that came to mind as you were talking for me was, like, draft picks. I want to say it was Bill Walsh, or it may have been, do you remember who's the guy in Dallas, the GM in Dallas, like, famous guy, not now, but do you know, does that ring a bell?
The Cowboys?
Yeah. Cowboys guy.
Like Jimmy Johnson or Bill Parcells was, I think he was coach though.
We'll have to look this up after. So pardon the inaccurate information that follows, but I believe it was the Dallas Cowboys GM back in, this is like early 90s, and he wanted to understand better, like, how to value a first overall pick versus a third overall pick, and not necessarily like that given year, just like if we're going to trade a third overall pick for a star running back or a star quarterback that's in the NFL already, like, how do we value that? Is that a good one for one or not? And I don't remember exactly. He had this like star system or point system, and essentially like a first overall pick was worth a second, third, and fourth, or something like that. A first overall pick was worth a third, fourth, and fifth overall. So like, getting the first overall pick on any given year's draft was so valuable, orders of magnitude more than having the third, fourth, and fifth all combined. And I'd be curious in the NHL, and you could probably look back years and years and figure out the same kind of thing. But like on the year that Crosby was drafted or Ovechkin was drafted first overall, like were the guys 3, 4, and 5 taken? Like, would you rather have all three of those or just Sidney Crosby or just Alex Ovechkin? I think it would, I don't know off the top of my head who those guys were in 3, 4, and 5. But as far as like this power law idea goes, I think taking that first selection, whether you said like it's in the hiring process or whether it's in the drafting process or your best player, and removing them from the equation, like, you really can't, you're not going to get the same return reward from just the next one up. And maybe you will from the second guy up with like McKinnon and McCarr, but then like there's a steep drop off at the third or the fourth. and it's not just like 1, 2, and 3 gold, silver, bronze. Like bronze is still pretty good. It's like, no, it's much different as you get lower.
So we've both listened to, and we can put this in the show notes, Daryl Morey speak on this idea. I think the NBA has figured out the importance, and it's just becoming in the statistics and analytics, which I'm not super privy on, but it's becoming so obnoxiously obvious that there are power laws at play in the NBA. And I think you're starting to see it, and I know he's in Pittsburgh right now, but how Kyle Dubas was building the Toronto Maple Leafs, he's got what they call like the Big Four, Nylander, Tavares, Matthews, Marner, and he has essentially bet on this basketball idea of power laws, or maybe he doesn't. I bet Kyle Dubas is clued into who Daryl Morey is and studies him a bit, but I also don't know that to be factually correct. But I think the NHL is starting to figure out the importance of having star power. And we were talking about it the other day with, like, and we can get into this podcast razor too, and maybe this is a good time to switch gears. But we were talking about, like, how I think coaches understand, and like the ones that will, let's just get into it right now. The podcast razor, assume the number of open source content pieces is directly proportional to how secure an individual is. I'm going to kick it over to you to set it up with your observations from David Carl, and then we can kind of link where I was just going to where we'll wrap up.
Yeah. So when I was watching the national championship game the other night, obviously, or maybe not obviously, it was BC versus Denver. BC's got kind of to the power law thing. They've got 4 first rounders that are absolutely dynamic up front offensively. And have probably been considered the favorite really all year, or at least if not the favorite, then certainly one of the best teams in the country. And Denver, you know, for me being out east, like I don't really watch any college hockey during our season. It's the same time. And being out east, you don't really hear people out here talk about Denver, or no one's watching Denver. And so I would consider them not an underdog, but not the favorite, I guess, in the public's eyes. And I would then throw myself in with the public. Anyway, it's like mid, I believe it was the second period, or maybe, no, it was first period, mid-game, on the bench interview. We've all listened to a million of these. And David Carl was asked what they need to do better, or just, you know, how he thought things were going. I don't remember the exact question. And his response, mid-game, mind you, like literally 40 seconds that he can get this out, is they need to play with a little bit more confidence with the puck and hold on to the puck more, because BC is very good with the puck offensively. So he's like, I think right now we're getting a little nervous. We're throwing it away, and that's giving them the puck, which is their strength. We want to take the puck away from them, and we want to hold on to it and make plays. And then he talked about angling, and we need to angle better, cut the ice in half, and just force them up one side as best we can, so that they're not just coming up with the puck all this speed and free range to do whatever the hell they want. I am not David Carl, and am not pretending to be, so he said it much more eloquently than I just did. But that was at the heart of what he was getting at. And I sent you a message because I was listening to this going like, man, there are so many of these interviews done, like I just said, throughout the year, whether it's Division I, NHL. I don't watch enough Division I to know. I think it's really NHL I'm talking about. And outside of like John Cooper being like, this is the best league in the world, I'm having fun. We talked about that last season on one of our podcasts. But like a lot of times, it's like, we need to get pucks deep. We need to get pucks on net. We need to crash the net more. You know, like we need to back check harder. We need to play fast. Like those things may all be true. And that's not really the point. The point for me is that as a viewer, I don't know if you're playing fast. Like I might think you're playing fast, but you don't. that's not playing fast to you as the coach of the NHL team. The comments that David Carl made of like angling and being more confident to make plays with the puck so that BC can't just have the puck the whole game. I can now watch the game and see like, is Denver doing this? Yes or no? It's very tangible is my point. So then I just extrapolate and imagine as a player at Denver, you probably know damn well what the objective is of that game. And in between periods, if that's Carl's message, it's pretty easy to understand or know whether you go out in the second period and do it or not. There's no gray area of like, did we angle well? Did we hold on to the puck more? So I loved that aspect, that it was very tangible and that you could clearly understand what he was saying. And then second point, and sorry, this is getting long-winded, but the second thing I really liked about it was that it was a direct, like, we're going to acknowledge that BC is really good with the puck. We're not afraid of that. We just need to take it away from them. I think a lot of times the instinct is like, we're playing a really good team. We need to not make mistakes. We need to not, like, and that leads to like, let's get rid of the puck, because the longer we have the puck, the more likely we are to make a mistake. That's natural. Everyone, the longer you have the puck, the more likely you are to make a mistake, because you can't really make a mistake with the puck if you don't have it. So for them, instead of being like, we got to get rid of the puck because they're so good, it's like, no, they're so good with the puck, we need it. We can't give it to them. Stop giving them free touches, free opportunities. So it's like, it was like inverted thinking, in my opinion, from him a little bit. So that's what I really liked about it. And then just kind of tying it back to your point of the more you open source ideas, and this is sort of, I'll let you take it, but like David Carl is not concerned that, seemingly not concerned that BC, anyone on BC's staff is going to hear that quote mid-game and be like, hey, this is what they're doing. We need to stop them from doing it. He's in the middle of what I think everyone would call the most important game of their season to that point, and probably the most like highest stakes, highest pressure. And he's literally just like, this is what we need to do to win. And he's just throwing it out there. And if BC's, if one of their coaches or ops guys or whoever has the earpiece in and hears that, it seems to me from the outside that David Carl's like, fine, I don't care. So I'll let you take it from there.
Yeah, this makes me think of, I was listening to, and I'm like, I like this idea, not just because I came up with it, but just because like we're both writers. We put things out on the internet, we share things, whether it's through video, audio, writing, all three. So we're in like that space, so maybe we're a little bit biased, but I think there's a security aspect of, and security versus insecurity, just to give you more context of where I'm going, not like home security. But if anyone was confused there, but like there's a security aspect to being like, even if the team on the bench has this feed, and even if they're listening to every word I say, one, they've had like 2 weeks to prepare for the Frozen Four and every possible opponent. So I hope they've done their homework at this point and know us inside and out. And if they do, great. And if they don't, here's our formula. Here's what we're trying to do. Try and stop us. Because, and this is like 2 years ago, 3 years ago, Cody Royal was putting out a ton of stuff, and we'll link him if you guys are hearing that name for the first time. But Cody and Fergus Connolly were doing some chats, and this is where I kind of first heard of this idea. But I've never been, and not to get too off topic, but I've never been huge on like, and maybe I just haven't been coaching at levels that matter enough, but like I'm not big on pre-scouting a ton. Because I think if we're doing what we're supposed to be doing, and we're doing it better and faster than the opponent can react to, we're going to be just fine. And I think having that mindset that we're going to dictate, we're going to do things our way, and we're just going to do them better than you can stop them. So let me write an essay or do a podcast and outline exactly what our brand of hockey looks like. And that kind of ties in the other thing I was thinking of, speaking of people that will come on a podcast and just open source everything. I was listening to Brandon Arado probably last summer, and he was asked a question, and he was like, you guys can, it was almost tongue in cheek, but then he just went into complete extreme detail. But he's like, again, to the Frozen Four thing with David Carl, like, you guys can all look on Instat, or you guys can all watch our games on Big Ten or whatever, and you know that we're running a 2-1-2. And if you don't, I'm going to tell you we run a 2-1-2, and this is what it looks like. And then he detailed it. And then he's like, we want to play 3-high and 4-high in the offensive zone. We want to play high zone offense. This is how we do it. And teams think that, oh, I can just cut the top and keep them in the corner. He's like, if you do that, we'll just bypass the F3 and then get it to the point. And then if you want to shade towards F3 and take that away, we'll just go directly to the D and we'll play our high zone offense that way. So it's like, no matter what you do, we know our game so well and we are prepared to play to our strengths so much that it doesn't matter what you do. We're just going to do our thing anyway, and we're still going to beat you. And I think that attitude is a better headspace to live in, talk about, like, power versus force. Like, power is just very out in the open. Let me share things that will help other people, other coaches listening. And, like, to my opponents that are listening, I don't care.